I think, in slightly different ways. And I don't think I said this directly to you, Dr. Culver, but if you want to interrupt me and protest, I'm used to it because I'm from Columbia. Predictions are vulnerable to wider margins of error in the world in which we live because the world is changing in unpredictable ways. Yet the simple observation that tomorrow is going to be different from today imposes on us the responsibility to predict. Every group in the society needs to look to the future. What do we do in the face of such a dilemma? To predict is dangerous. Not to predict is devastatingly dangerous. The trade-offs of the two types of danger lead to a simple conclusion. Predict we must. What does predict we must mean for the secretarial profession? And we can really generalize the general office secretarial profession. The secretarial profession must begin to say what the future is likely to be. Basically, a professional group must project its own future if it is going to be a guide to its own destiny. As I thought about secretaries in 1970, I came to an unpleasant conclusion. And you may not agree with me, and please don't hesitate to be honest. As I think of the secretary in 1970, she seems to reflect what others have imposed on her. The vision and thinking of secretaries in the 50s and the 60s was missing, I think. The secretary today is in a position that is not of her own making. I have no magic vision. I have not any data that I'm going to release that nobody else knows about 1980. With none of the props to support my venturing into the future, I shall do so nonetheless with a very simple objective. As professional people, and I understand that there are teachers in this audience as well as secretaries, as professional people concerned about a given profession, we'll call it the secretarial profession, we must begin today to think of tomorrow. In fact, if a person today is not thinking of tomorrow, he is not fully with it today. Another way of making this obviously simple observation is to say, to be with it today is to have some of your attention directed to tomorrow. Does that make any sense? Now let me attempt to specify what I'm going to talk about in the time that has been given to me. First, I'm going to try to identify some impressionistic types of evidence that have caused me to question the extent to which secretaries in 1970 are thinking about tomorrow. Second, I'd like to discuss some of the pervasive predictions that we're hearing today that seem to have some interesting implications for this profession. And third, I'm going to try to sketch out very inadequately the optimal role of the secretary in 1980. Now back to the evidence that causes me to question the extent to which secretaries are thinking about tomorrow or thought about tomorrow during the past two decades. First, the model of the secretary persisting in the folklore of business behavior is several decades out of date. The secretary appears to be perceived as a female who, for the most part, carries out routine assignments. If an employer does delegate a job to his secretary, and she does an excellent job, this is the kind of comment I hear the employer make. Well, I have an exceptional person in the position. She is not typical. Another observation of this break, this model that I say is obsolete, a secretary said to me last April, "Oh, I'd love to compose letters. I'm a college graduate, but my employer never gives me the opportunity. In fact, and I don't mean to be immodest, I could write better letters than he writes." Another piece of evidence about this obsolete model: the relationship that exists between the employer and the secretary, between the so-called boss, which many secretaries call the man or woman for whom they work, is indicative of something that should not be, I think. The mere observation that we don't have a better colloquial expression than boss for the person for whom you work implies the obsolete model. Secretaries have been heard to say, "Oh, the boss never makes a mistake. I must always assume responsibility for the boss's mistake." Or as our lovely speaker this morning said, "The secretary always makes the boss look good." I never reveal, this is another secretary talking to me, "I never reveal how I feel. I always appear calm, composed, friendly, and happy." I say the boss isn't in when he is in. I've learned to tell little white lies. My dear people, such comments reflect a role for the secretary that doesn't at all fit what 1970 has given us about wholesome, honest relationships. You don't get a notion of mutual respect, of mutual cooperation, of straightforward relationships when a secretary is playing games with an employer. If I were a millionaire, I'd give somebody a sum of money if they think of a better term than boss for an employer. It rubs me the wrong way. Does it rub anybody else the wrong way? No? I see men shaking their heads. No. I have to be very careful. I've been influenced by these women's liberation groups on our campus, and I haven't joined any, although some of you are going to think, poor Dr. Mason, I don't know what he thought my credentials were, but I haven't joined any of them. But you can't help but be influenced by radical groups. I'll tell you, not only have I not joined them, but I haven't even cooperated. Last year, when I was on sabbatical and was a full-time student incognito on our own campus, two young ladies came over to me one day in economics class and said, "Are you free this afternoon?" I said, "No. What did you want done?" "Well, we need women, girls, to pass out these brochures on getting rid of the abortion law in New York State. We wondered if you could pass out flyers." And all I would need would be to be at the corner when President Fisher went by, and I would be passing out flyers. So you see, I'm really very conservative. Another piece of evidence: the perception of the kinds of skills secretaries need as perceived by secretaries. Let me read you something that I am quoting verbatim from a professional publication for secretaries. The author is a secretary, and she's describing what you need to be a good secretary. She, referring to the secretary, must know a little about public relations, labor relations, human relations, and even family relations. Have at least a passing knowledge of accounting procedures, advertising, and a thorough knowledge of business policies. She must know something about computers, mergers, subsidiaries, parent companies, organization charts and office machines, and even janitorial services. Now the question I ask you is, in what professional group would you have the practitioner saying, "Oh, you need to know just a little"? I can see some of the young doctors that I know saying, "Oh, you need to know a little about how blood circulates, or you need to know a little about how to use those tools that you cut up people with." Or can you hear a member of the teaching profession saying, "You need to have a passing knowledge of psychology"? Terms such as "a little of," "a passing knowledge," "something of," do not add up to a vitality, a cluster of knowledge that is going to give the group any kind of professional status. Another piece of evidence. Employers say, "My secretary doesn't understand the total business sufficiently to be delegated responsibility." Or, "My secretary feels she should have a wider range of responsibility, but she does not comprehend fully the marketing functions in this organization." Secretaries are still psychologically tied to their shorthand pads and typewriters and look at jobs in the details. This reflects that for a variety of reasons, secretaries don't possess the breadth of background to do a complicated job. Now, I have a feeling that part of this is due to job discrimination, that secretaries aren't really put into positions where they're going to learn the broad job. It's very complicated, and I would imagine, you know, if I knew anything about sociology, I could talk about it intelligently. But you see, I just know a little about sociology, which is as good as knowing nothing about it, let me tell you. It also reflects, I think, the fact that secretaries fail to get additional education that is broadening. I teach in a school that is a graduate school only, and it has been a graduate school only for many decades, but we still get telephone calls from all kinds of people seeking a place to take additional education. And we get calls from secretaries. What do they want? I've never had a secretary call the office and ask for a course in economics or the role of the corporation in the American society. Is there a refresher course, advanced shorthand? Or could I take a course in typing, production typing? And several personnel directors in New York City have told me that females in office, clerical, secretarial positions often are the ones who fail to take advantage of tuition exemption privileges that the company provides. Secretaries don't understand how complicated a whole operation is. Let me quickly say that I'm not talking about all secretaries. Some secretaries today are already the secretaries of 1980. I am merely identifying what seems to be my impression of the average secretary at this moment. The secretarial worker at this point is not equipped to do a higher level job. She does not have the knowledge, she does not have the psychological relationship to the people with whom she works. She's still in a somewhat inferior position. If you can't behave honestly in a situation, as far as I'm concerned, you're in an inferior situation. If a woman says to me, "I can't tell my husband really how I feel. That dear little lady is not in as good a relationship as she ought to be, as she deserves. This indeed is a very negative picture. And if you were a group of New York teachers and secretaries, you'd already be screaming at me. I have used some observations from the fall of 69. I'll give you one more that I don't have in my notes. It disturbs me. I'm sorry this is being recorded, but I don't care. I wrote to 25 top, what I thought were top secretaries in New York City last fall, and asked them if they'd tell me what the future was for their own profession. Several called me, didn't quite understand what I wanted. Not one secretary gave me anything. What I was asking was somewhat irrelevant to what they were thinking and believing. And I'm sorry there are any men in the room for this next point. Just for this next point, women always like men around, even if at times you do think we're inferior. When I ask men who are generally in executive and junior executive positions in business, I will generally find somebody who's thinking ahead. I don't know that this is a sex difference. It may be related to the societal pressure in keeping down the aspirational levels of women. It's very complicated, I'm sure. The secretary in 1970 is still a one-dimensional worker. She isn't very far removed from the first little typewriters, as the first female secretaries were called, I understand, who entered the office. What did the first female secretary do? Now I'm using a Fellini technique of just imagining the past. I wasn't there, believe it or not. However, as I think about what the first secretary did, this is what I think happened. Because in my hometown in West Virginia, we still have offices that might look very much like the 1907 offices in big cities. I would see an employer sitting possibly at the same desk or table where his secretary works. His female typewriter, the woman who's working for him, carried out the routines that had gotten too much for him. The male had been doing his own handwriting of letters. And I would guess that the first secretary, it's great not to know very much history because you make it up. The first secretary, you see, took this handwritten letter and just typed it, and there he sat. Or the employer had always kept his own records in his own account books. But his business got a little too big, and I could see he started the first row, and he said, "Now, my dear young woman, you just continue with what I have done." In other words, the first female secretaries were an extension of the routine arm of the employer. The secretary wasn't very far away physically, but she was at the other side of the desk, I would guess. I'm sure you would agree that such a situation is no longer the case. Now, rather than belabor the point, let me just give you a few simple analogies that you have looked at, but I'm asking you to look at them in a slightly different way. The businessman of 1900 was generally a so-called self-made businessman, the kind who may have had a sixth grade education, who had an idea, was an entrepreneur, and went out and became a successful businessman. 1970. What is a successful businessman? Seldom, if ever, is he today a fully self-made man. He may not have been educated in the way of business, but he has surrounding him all kinds of technical personnel who add to his own understandings the technical knowledge that is absolutely prerequisite if one is going to be successful in the business community. In other words, the businessman today has a very complicated network of understanding in order to do his job. Another simple analogy. A recent projection indicates that electronic calculators have outdistanced basic adding calculating machines. The businessman in 1914, if anybody knows the real dates, will you please tell me, because our library has sort of gone to pieces and I couldn't find the act, but I think somebody told me that the business machines really got underway in offices about 1914. There's a historian in the room, I'd be happy to be challenged. Well, can you imagine what the businessman and his workers thought of when they saw those first adding machines? Here's a machine that will do the adding for us. And that was a great contribution. Today, a machine that merely adds is one-dimensional. There has to be a machine that has a memory. There has to be a machine that does some kind of synthesis, because the transactions, the activities that go across the desk in the course of a day are two. Now you think we've been talking 2 hours, you know. Now, I'd like to turn to some of these predictions about the future business environment that have implications for us in the secretarial studies field, whether as teachers or as secretaries. I pulled out three from a continuing study that General Electric has underway, and then I have two or three of my own. The first one is the attitude toward work and leisure. We've been hearing this for a long time, that there is a shift in the relative interest in work and leisure. Many people are losing the old-fashioned Puritan ethic that to work is honorable and you have to work if you're going to have any bread to eat. We're now beginning, and this report pointed out, that there will continue to be work, but people will not work merely because they must earn a living. They will demand that what they do has some intrinsic value to them as human beings. In fact, these forecasters for General Electric said that people will look at their lives as work, leisure, and education. There'll be a third component, possibly, that will be not a utilitarian approach to education, but education that, again, has significance to the total personality. Well, what are the implications of this trend, which I haven't discussed in any detail? We can go into it further if anybody's interested. Women will seek positions and the kinds of work where they're going to find personal meaning. Therefore, those who are responsible for educating are going to have to do something about helping young people get a sense of what their own personal propensities are, so that there can be training that makes sense relative to their own basic talents and aspirations. Work will have to have some internal significance. And so the young women in 1980 who are secretaries are there because that kind of work makes sense to them. Another one of the trends that this study pointed out was the shift in the occupational distribution of civilian employment. If we look ahead just 5 years to 1975, we find projections that professional and technical personnel will outnumber skilled craftsmen. As recently as 1947, there were twice as many craftsmen as professional people. This shifting distribution among occupational fields indicates that with the increase in professional employees comes a concomitant increase in supporting personnel. And it seems very obvious, it may not turn out to be obvious, that the kinds of tasks that secretaries could do will multiply during the next decade. For around the professional worker who has a variety of responsibilities will have to be several people who serve as assistants. And I don't know what the title is going to be, but I can see today's secretary being transformed into at least one or two of these types of people. The third trend from this study, businesses need to participate in the community. In keeping with the higher aspirations of society in general, the forecaster said, business has been reminded that the public will expect more with respect to the quality of life in business organizations and the quality of businesses' contributions to society. How will this be manifested? The business will have concern, first of all, with the continuing development of their own employees. Business will also begin to look at the firm, at their own organization, as a social organization, and begin to be more concerned about the way in which tasks are put together. They'll look at such things as, are there bottlenecks to creativity in this firm? Are there bottlenecks to autonomy in this firm? And when firms begin to identify new clusters for tasks in order to maximize creativity, maximize autonomy, maximize responsibility, I don't know how you feel about it, but I want females in there participating. We don't want our females to become totally obsolete. Now, these next few are observations that I've gleaned from a few places, and you could challenge these perfect beautifully. The first one, and I hinted at some initially, the first one is people are demanding living and working situations where relationships are basically honest, where there is little duplicity, little playing of games. We're beginning to talk about, thank heavens, the character of the people who do the jobs of the world. For we have learned, and learned it in a devastatingly costly way, that to have technical know-how and not to have integrity is to have a situation where something very important is missing. The secretary cannot continue to be the person who deceives in the middle of the chain. She should not be imposed upon to lie for her employer. An employer who cannot assume all the responsibilities he ought to assume and thereby is not free to answer the telephone should be dismissed from the organization. When somebody hasn't done a job or isn't available, nobody should be there covering up for him. Now, let me tell you quickly that there are times when it is appropriate to give somebody a helping hand and to do something for someone who has, for some reason, failed to do it. I'm not talking about that. The young people of this country are on our university and college campuses, and I don't suppose it's hit the Midwest because everybody out here is honest, but our young people are challenging the administration and the faculty on this point. They're saying, we want to be honest. We think you ought to be honest. Don't tell us that we have to go out and do a day's work for a day's pay, and you come in and lecture to us and you haven't prepared your lecture. Don't tell us that money isn't everything, and you kill yourself to get a government grant so you can increase your income 25%. I see this as one of the most exciting trends that we're going to have to measure up character-wise. We have spent about 2 decades adding years of education to the average American's education. In 1940, the average American had 8.9 years of education. In 1970, the average American has 12.45 years of education. Can you imagine what that means when the population between 1940 and 1970 has increased about 80 million people in this country? But we are finding out that all of that education hasn't done anything about crime, about cheating, about honesty, about integrity. And we've got to make an about face, because at the beginning of this decade, the United States is in a pretty vulnerable position. Now, another bit of evidence, or another trend that I see, and I've already hinted at this one too. Let's face it, the secretary is a female. And females in our society have a very complicated role. I'm not here, as I said earlier, to represent the feminist groups from New York City. But I think that there is some kind of shift via the male-female relationships. And let me tell you, it's not only in New York City. I was in North Carolina about a month ago and had dinner with a group of 20 young women at Wake Forest University. And it was an informal supper, and they wanted to talk about the role of women in the society. And when I got there, I found 5 of them had been to New York. And they'd been talking to all these liberation groups. And of course, being charming Southern girls, one prettier than the next, they were shocked by the tactics and the fire of the New York girls. And so they were not accepting the tactics at all. But they, in their quiet Southern way, had translated it and were saying, we will not accept the role that businesses want us to accept when we go out in the fall. And one very lovely little girl said, do you know that I was interviewed and I didn't get the job, and I sense it was just job discrimination. The dean of women said to me later, that young lady has a problem. She's too pretty and companies are afraid that she can't be serious about what she wants to do. She had perceived it properly. The dean of women had not told her the truth. Well, I haven't done a study, but it seems to me that we are at this point of saying that everyone in the society has a right to use the language of the kids to do his own thing. And if everybody's going to do his own thing, females are going to get a chance too. It seems to me that the position of women in our society is a far more comfortable position than it was 3 decades ago. At least I don't find deans of women on college campuses saying to girls, now girls, please suppress any kind of behavior that will let boys know that you have a mind. because boys are a little afraid of girls who can think. That is as out of date as the bustle, and thank heavens. It's very likely that women are not going to be discriminated against as much in this decade as they have been. This has some very powerful implications for those of you who teach secretaries. You ought to begin to broaden the kinds of training you give them so that they can match the demands of the business world. And the final trend, and Dr. Culver talked about this one this morning, there is continuing to be a shift from human operations to automated operations, so that less and less of the work to be done is of a routine nature. The implications here for the secretary are obvious. We've got to get the secretary away from her typewriter and shorthand pad and give her another focus of concern. And now, what is the role of the secretary in 1980? Let me just talk briefly about this role from a psychological view, from a training education view, and finally from a societal view. Psychologically, the secretary in 1980 will find satisfaction in the work she does. She'll understand the total dynamics of the operation and be intrigued by how the strategy for getting things done actually functions. She will understand fully what the goal of the organization is and what she contributes to that goal. From a training education position, we find the secretary in 1980 not someone who knows a little about a lot of things. We find the secretary a master at what I will call the science of communication and the science of management. The secretary in 1980 will know how to use optimally a wide range of devices that will do much of the routine work. She'll know how to use informational retrieval units. In 1970, the manager is moving in to use a computer to help him in making decisions. In 1980, our transformed secretary will also be using a computer to help her make decisions. Actually, by 1980, it's very likely that we'll have a new title, and both men and women will be doing this job. The secretary will, in 1980, know what the important tasks are and will take care of them, and there will be no trivia which serves to obscure the basic needs of the organization for which she serves. The secretary, from a societal point of view, will be like, I hope, everybody else in the society, tuned in to the relationship of her own behavior to the total. Every professional group must sooner or later come to grips with what it contributes to the common good of the society. I saw an experimental attempt on the part of the National Conference Board to figure out what the future is going to be like. And there were some comparisons between these so-called experts who were asked to make the predictions and the lay public. Now, the lay public is a collection of people who have had these 12 plus years of education. I was very distressed By noting the figures, and I can't call them off at this point, but I was very distressed by the extent to which the general public was giving little or no attention to the great concerns of this society. And I would like to see a group such as the secretarial profession through NSA and professional education organizations that are concerned with the education of secretaries take a societal view. We talk about increasing the productivity of the country. What is the contribution of the office worker? How can office workers recombine their own inputs of energy and talent to make a more significant contribution to the total? 20 years ago, if I had been speaking to you, I don't think I would have said very much about the societal component of the responsibility of any professional group. But we have learned in the last 20 years, it seems to me, that the direction toward oneself and attention with maximizing one's own benefits does not automatically maximize the benefit to the total society. And ultimately, the key to any professional group is, what do you see your role when you open your eyes to the total world? This decade, and I don't mean to get political, but this decade has seen some horrible experiences. We have seen three men with beautiful vision knocked down, and we had to suffer through the agonies, in some instances, of their death and then their funerals. They were trying, and I think those assassinations really reflect that our society had become very self-centered. We couldn't love, we couldn't appreciate the men who had vision that stirred anybody who came within their orbits. Now in 1970, unless that kind of vision becomes a part of every individual in this country, whether he is a clerk, a typist, a secretary, a teacher, this nation is not going to achieve its potential. And so I say to you, you raise your sights, you make a difference where you are. You're not held back by discrimination or yesterday's folklore about what a woman could or could not do, because tomorrow is as new as the potential for life on the moon.